Welcome to No Hype, the podcast about truth, science, and the future of marketing, brought to you by your hosts, Allison Dietz
and Brett House.
Today on the podcast, we have Brian Stavis, Global Category Lead, Advertising and Marketing Technology for Amazon Web Services Marketplace. Brian is responsible for launching the Advertising and Marketing Technology category on AWS Marketplace. Prior to that, he worked in partner development for the AWS Partner Network and was actively involved in audience and business development at a number of tech and media companies before that. Brian, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much.
So Brian, before we get officially started, tell us a little bit about your background. You've always been at the intersection of business and technology in some way. Tell us a bit about your career journey and how you eventually got into AWS.
I got to admit, I probably, and pardon my French, but I fell ass backwards into the field of technology. I got to preface it with saying how lucky I've gotten throughout my career. So out of undergraduate, I was extremely fortunate to have a great mentor who offered me a job into the growing advertising and technology field, where, you know, sponsored advertising and programmatic bidding was being a fast growing area in the ad tech space. From there, I had another mentor who brought me along to help expand my knowledge of ad tech beyond programmatic advertising to learn about influencer marketing, essentially a company that helped digital creators monetize their growing presence on social media, on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, so on and so forth. And I quickly realized I chose the wrong industry and I should have become an influencer because...
Are you not an influencer?
I should have been, but I'm certainly not creative enough for such endeavors. So I guess here's the fun part for me, because I've always valued connections and network that I've built in this large, but as I think we all can attest, tightly knit technology community. And so I received my next two jobs from two former mentors from the first two companies I worked with to go build two respective advertising technology platforms. The first being for a mobile ad platform, helping app developers promote their apps across mobile devices. And then the second being an ad tech platform, helping influencers again, but helping them monetize their live streams on Twitch, Facebook, Twitter, and across a bunch of different social media platforms. So it was a lot of fun, but all of these experiences helped me establish some form of credibility. And so I ended up getting a job at Amazon Web Services to help build out our advertising and marketing technology footprint with both partners and now on AWS Marketplace.
Yeah, very cool. You know, I think it sounds like you were really instrumental in launching the advertising and marketing technology category in terms of AWS Marketplace. You know, tell us about, you know, what was really involved with that and why is it so important for end users in this space, and how is it, you know, what is the role it plays within AWS and Amazon and how you started getting things set up?
So I've always looked at AWS Marketplace and Amazon.com as a very similar growth trajectory, right? Amazon.com in the late 90s focused mainly on books, but someone raised their hand and said, you know, we should build an apparel category and sell shoes and shirts and socks and so on and so forth. Now they sell everything underneath the sun. The same thing was happening on AWS Marketplace, where AWS Marketplace has done a phenomenal job of catering to IT decision makers. But I identified an opportunity when I was on the AWS Partner Network to help build a category catered to advertisers and marketers. And part of that is I realized, like, very few CMOs wake up in the morning and think, I got to call AWS.
That being said, we've all learned that CMOs have a large tech budget, sometimes larger than the CTOs or CIOs, right? So they're spending. Where else are they going to spend, right? So
you're spot on. And that was part of the thing, is marketers are mostly buyers, not builders. And I wanted to help create an online catalog for marketers to procure, you know, an end-to-end marketing technology stack on AWS Marketplace.
Yep. So you kind of hinted at the genesis story of cloud computing, of AWS in general. You know, and I'm old enough where I remember some of the very initial book sales on Amazon as an e-commerce company. They were struggling the first holiday season, struggling with fulfillment, right? And then they grow into a behemoth. And as you mentioned, led by Andy Jassy, who's been quoted as saying things like, I don't know if any of us had the audacity to predict that AWS would grow as big and as fast as it did, right? And it became, in a sense, you know, along with other cloud providers, but the operating system behind the internet. What's your take on that growth structure? And you sort of hinted at it just a moment ago, right? From this e-commerce company that sort of expanded into multiple categories to becoming, you know, 30, 35% market share for a massive industry. And I think it's what, $60 billion in revenue at this point?
I think what's amazing at AWS is, in when I first started here, it was, you realize the footprint that the company has across every single industry. And, you know, I think the COVID pandemic obviously accelerated every single brand's need and ability to engage and optimize how they interact with their users. Every single brand across both B2C and B2B, across every single industry with financial services and healthcare and life sciences, travel, hospitality, retail, manufacturing, the list goes on. They've had to reinvent the way that they're engaging with individual customers in a very personalized way. And I know we can talk about personalization to death. But that, to me, has been the most fascinating thing of seeing the impact on AWS on just daily consumers' lives. From, you know, the shows I watch on Netflix to the things that I do in the healthcare space, it's amazing how the cloud is impacting people worldwide. And I'm just truly fascinated by it.
And you think that was fueled by, you know, not only the data-driven marketing ecosystem that grew rapidly from, you know, the early 2000s on, all the way through some of the services that are provided and powered, like within healthcare, as you mentioned, with data. Right, that data has to fly through pipes, has to move through, you know, across a superhighway. And do you see, you know, AWS is playing that role of, you know, providing the toll system as well as the superhighway for a lot of this data movement to enable some of these capabilities?
What's so interesting is going back to the pandemic piece, right? Is there has been this explosion of data, as you just kind of touched on, where customers are capturing data across the entire customer journey. Just having data is not good enough. You have to identify good data versus bad data through data enrichment tools and identity solutions. And you ultimately have to leverage that data to optimize the best personalized experience. And personalization, again, to me, is just kind of a hype word, for lack of a better term. But I think what the power of data has been able to do for a lot of customers is unlock just better customer experiences. You no longer have to guess where to put that subscribe button or what, you know, what product to show to who and when they enter your site. So I think the interesting piece to it, Brett, regarding data is the amount of use cases that it can unlock. The improvements around machine learning and AI algorithms that can feed, you know, additional personalization across the entire customer value chain. So to me, it's very interesting, the opportunity for data, but that also gets back into, you know, data responsibility and data privacy and what we're seeing in the space with some of the changes that Google and Apple continue to make.
Yeah, so you just touched on data privacy. That's something that we talk about a lot, obviously. And I think, you know, cloud computing has really made possible a lot in terms of the world of advertising and analytics. You're talking about being able to stitch together that full customer journey and enable that full customer journey. And data is really what powers that today. But as we know, there's a lot of news around privacy and data deprecation. So there's a lot of change that's happening in the industry today. So how does privacy technology, things like clean rooms and privacy safe, you know, data-driven advertising, what is the future for that? What is, you know, the cloud's role in making that possible?
I think there's two sides to this coin with respects to data privacy and, the balancing act between personalization and data privacy. On one side, I think we can all agree that personalization can reduce acquisition costs and mitigate churn while increasing overall marketing effectiveness quite significantly. However, the less exciting or sexy side of that coin is data integrity and privacy. And What you're going to continue to see is this trend of first-party data platforms becoming, you know, a necessary solution for brands as they navigate the changing data privacy landscape. One of the things that I talked about on the Brave New Worlds webinar was the use of data clean rooms. We're seeing this rise of the concept of data partnership clean rooms. You're basically putting your data into a mutually shared space where multiple vendors have access to that first party data in a clean and responsible way. But going back to my whole logic, you know, with respects to customer data platforms, they were all the hype 2 years ago, even before Google and Apple made their respective changes to cookies and iOS. But now a CDP is a fundamental building block for brands as they personalize and optimize the user journey and engage with the users at the quote unquote moment of intent.
Yeah, and I think that makes sense in terms of how do you leverage that first-party data? You know, how do you empower that first-party data? But that also assumes that first-party data is the end-all, be-all. And, you know, I think that's not necessarily true because, you know, there's, especially when you think about things like customer acquisition, you know, second-party data needs to play a role there too. So there's a key role that the cloud can, and clean rooms can also play in terms of second-party data usage in a privacy-safe way and ensuring that you can reach those new audiences too, right?
Yes. I think there's definitely a lot of noise on data clean rooms, right? The concept in its simplest form is a clean room is a privacy safe environment to facilitate second party data sharing. But going back to my comments around data partnerships, and I certainly think that all like partnerships help all boats rise, as cliche as it sounds. So much for no hype today, but in actuality, I think one major of innovation as it pertains to data clean rooms are in cross vendor clean rooms, where all first party data and second party data or advertising data can come together, you know, in a clean environment. These cross vendor solutions can ultimately help with personalization, campaign orchestration, and measurement and attribution for a brand. And to me, at the crux of it is, how are marketers maximizing their overall effectiveness of their campaigns with individual users while we maintain user trust with best of breed data privacy and security solutions to allow the industry to continue to, you know, innovate for years to come? And that's why I certainly think the ecosystem play is certainly a ripe opportunity of interest for brands to collaborate with.
Yeah, and it's funny because we talk about clean rooms because we're, you know, in the business of privacy technology for sure. And you talked about ecosystem, about second party data sharing. A lot of the use cases that you're discussing have been around for ever since the advent of digital advertising, or at least programmatic in sort of data-driven advertising as we know it, right? So you could do a private marketplace where you had a Sheridan on one side and a United Airlines on the other, combining, commingling their data, or at least sharing in terms of audience targeting, so that Sheridan could hit up a Hilton buyer mm-hmm. that they know is coming to Fort Myers with an advertisement for a hotel or hotels that they have within the region, right? So that's happened, but I think the clean room is adding that sort of permissioned privacy layer on top. It's powering the same use case as what was available before, but doing it in a handful of different ways. One, data is not moving from point A to point B. It's not moving from outside of one contained sort of data vault, right? That's protected, that's got limited access. In fact, sometimes the access to that data clean room is really driven through machine learning. It's not a database on a server somewhere, right, that gets forgotten about, and then that ends up in a data breach with 10 million emails getting thrown out to the ecosystem. Do you see clean rooms as sort of fulfilling on, you know, it's a technology looking for a use case in certain cases, right? Do you find them fulfilling on existing use cases just to maintain the status quo of what we've been doing from a data-driven marketing perspective over the last 10, 15 years? Or actually making more things possible beyond just those standard use cases?
The latter, absolutely. So these types of data partnerships and first-party data solutions, to me, can introduce a new era of personal data by building, you know, distributed platforms that accelerate data generation, you know, facilitating data access and streamlining data analysis to extract insights. And I also think there's an area where blockchain and privacy-first technologies can enable individuals to maintain control of their data, share it securely, and, you know, compensate both parties equitably. So to me, this is a big access where I think these data partnerships, these data clean rooms, first party data solutions are going to accelerate the pace of innovation while, you know, maintaining at the core of it is data privacy. And you're going to see more and more technology companies adopt a privacy first approach to innovation so that we can truly establish trust with the user base while helping advance new opportunities, as you kind of alluded to, Brett.
So you think that by facilitating sort of data sharing, data collaboration, right, it takes some of that risk that certain advertisers might think is there, especially with GDPR and CCPA and a lot of privacy restrictions, out of the equation, which I think creates less friction in that movement of, or lack of movement of data, right? It creates less friction in the data sharing sort of use case, right? Where is that what you're suggesting?
I certainly believe so. But I think the concept of data clean rooms, while it's starting to gain traction, the concept has been around for quite some time.
Yeah.
Yeah, data sharing. I mean, to Brett's point, that different parties are going to have different information about a right. user, and we want to make sure that we can facilitate that best customer experience in a privacy safe way, where information that's unnecessary isn't shared, but information that's useful that can enable a better experience is shared so that you can execute that. I want to come back to something you just mentioned. You were talking about blockchain, and we've always been talking about two different parties, but you're in sort of inserting a third party into that, which is the consumer, and them playing a role in this data sharing experience. Do you see that as part of the future as well for the ad tech ecosystem?
I'm a firm believer on the Web3 train. Do I think that there's a lot of hype again? Absolutely. But it's an area that I'm closely monitoring that, you know, what are the solutions that are getting developed in the Web3 era of data sharing insights and even new marketing tactics? There's a lot of interesting innovation happening in the Web3 space that excites me between the new ways to market and monetize digital experiences with individual users, to the ways that data can be stored in a privacy safe compliant manner on the blockchain. And, you know, mm-hmm. I think blockchain technology is somewhat counterintuitive of it needs to be publicly disclosed, but it needs to be privacy safe. So that's one area where I'm like kind of scratching my head of like, how on earth is this going to happen? But I still believe that it's early days in Web3. And I think once the froth somewhat goes away, we'll undoubtedly unpack some pretty groundbreaking solutions to impact, you know, future generations to come.
That makes sense, given your background in influencers. I mean, you've been at the forefront of like, I think it's so fascinating, but it makes sense. You know, these are people that have, you know, found a way to monetize their content. And it makes sense that, you know, that then you might translate into a future advertising ecosystem where you can also monetize, you know, your ad impressions. You've talked a lot in the industry, and in preparation for this, we always, you know, have an eye on our guest, and you've talked a lot in the industry about, you know, the seamless customer digital experience. How exactly do you find that? What exactly does the seamless experience look like from the vantage point of the end user? So with the customer in mind, and then also, you know, what is the marketer's view of what that means?
So a seamless digital experience in my mind is really, how do you optimize every single point of that digital journey? From the moment that a customer enters your website or your app or your storefront, how are you engaging with that user on a personalized basis while managing that data integrity and privacy, right? If a customer is struggling to check out on your site, you're going to see a huge spike in churn and cart abandonment. And so a seamless journey is optimizing from the moment that you touch that storefront, the moment that you touch that website, to when you're scrolling on the site. How are you optimizing that? And there's literally dozens of solutions that enable brands to optimize that end-to-end customer experience and user journey. You no longer have to guess where to put your subscribe button or your buy now button. Like there's products that show you where to put it, who to put it in front of, when to put it in front of someone. You can use all of these third-party solutions to help you personalize that end-to-end customer journey. And there's machine learning algorithms that brands can really create a seamless user experience to maximize conversion rates while you know, again, managing that balance of user trust and data privacy.
But is it an oversimplification of the reality from a brand's perspective? So if you're in a captive environment, you know, you're advertising within the Amazon ecosystem or you're advertising within the Facebook ecosystem, retail being specifically a slightly easier play because that's where the point of sale is sure. happening. Right. So they could be, you know,
digital e-commerce in particular, because
e-commerce in particular. Yeah. You could be, you know, it's shop abandonment, it's page visits, product views, all these things that you can connect the dots and you can see where a person is interacting with your brand in a mobile app, on a desktop, et cetera. But once you start leaving that ecosystem, right, and that consumer is going, you know, we're not digital animals. I mean, we're largely digital, but they're exposed to digital out of home. They're having in-store experiences, right, brick and mortar. They're exposed to multiple media types. Many of the media exposures might happen within other walled gardens. So the notion, and I'm going to challenge you on this, the notion of connecting the dots, and this is what, yep. you know, marketing attribution is trying to do. It's sort of trying to credit each one of these touch points in an appropriate way while taking into account all of the baseline factors that are driving that purchase, right? Because it's not just the media exposure. It's not just the experience on the e-commerce website. It might be seasonality or you know, the pandemic that's driving that behavior or a certain percentage of that behavior. So how do you really, because there is a lot of talk in the industry about customer experience and delivering the end-to-end seamless customer experience yep. from first exposure to actual purchase. It sounds like, in from our experience, that a lot of brands really struggle with that, right? From a data management perspective, getting their data house in order, from a delivering the kind of the right type of content or product offering based on where they are in that path to purchase. And then finally, being able to give credit where credit is due for the purchase, right? Because they oftentimes overcredit one particular media, like last yep. click, versus another particular media or otherwise. So, I mean, how do you think about that in terms of the complexity of that?
You're giving me PTSD about last click, having to fight for attribution. So I think one of the interesting things that we're talking about, like with respects to that seamless experience is, you no longer have to build everything in-house. You no longer have to build solutions to capture data across the entire customer value chain. We do live in the real world, but all of us are digital creatures. If you see the statistics out there of how much time people are spending on mobile devices and digital devices, it's pretty profound, right? And I think COVID certainly accelerated that. All of us were indoors. All of us were on our computers, on our devices, on our mobile devices, looking at, or I mean, whether or not it is B2C with interacting with brands. I mean, you talked about digital commerce, but travel and hospitality has completely reinvented themselves. You no longer have to go through a travel agent and call them up and book a hotel room or book a flight. Now you just go onto the app and book something. Same thing is happening in healthcare. You no longer have to call the doctor office to make an appointment. You can go to the specific app or the website and book an appointment or do things digitally and do remote or virtual appointments. So I certainly think, yes, B2C brands had a head start, but you're seeing this shift with B2B brands starting to embrace digital first strategies to engage with their users. Going back to my first point though, with respects to not having to build every solution in-house, you know, the stat that you see out there is like, there's over 8,400 marketing technology solutions in the space today.
Yep, the LumaScape.
It's my favorite, like it's the chief MarTech diagram from Scott Brinker. And I always point to it is like, customers can choose a digital stack that is right for their customers and right for their business. You can take advantage of the billions of dollars that these companies are putting into R&D to build, you know, a tool set that provides a strategic advantage against your competitors. You don't have to build it all in-house. It is, I guess, the point of that I'm trying to make there.
Yeah, so the tools and the technology are there to make a lot of this sort of connective tissue between channels, between media exposures, between purchase behaviors, a lot more possible than it ever has been. And to your point, because partly because of the pandemic, our lives have it's only accelerated, you know, the hackneyed term of digital transformation to the point where a large percentage of our lives are spent in digital environments.
So, Brian, you were just talking about this build versus buy idea. And I think we've talked a little bit about privacy. We've talked about data management. What should marketers be mindful of? What should they be thinking about? What are the watch outs that they should be thinking about when they're building their own customized solution for best in class data management and analytics versus buying it?
My two cents on that, a build versus buy always comes down to a balance of cost and speed to market. Will building a solution force you away from your core competency and impact the existing customer experience? Or is building a solution in-house really cheaper when it comes down to the development and engineering hours that are taken away from your core products to build a new data and analytics solution? Mm-hmm. Buying typically helps with speed to market, and oftentimes the learning curve of building and operating, maintaining and innovating a homegrown customer data solution or analytics solution is probably more time consuming than buying a ready-made and, you know, interoperable solution off the shelf. That to me is where that ecosystem play comes really at the forefront. And specifically on AWS Marketplace, we do want to make that buying experience for software and professional services as easy as it is to buy batteries on Amazon.com.
Yeah. And I think you're right about the innovation. We bump into the same thing in analytics, where there's a lot of brands who, you know, have to build massive teams that are trying to just maintain, you know, the skills and the specialization that a lot of, you know, companies already have in place. And so why not take advantage of that specialization and that experience and that innovation? To your point, in terms of engineering resources, these are resources that you could use elsewhere and in other ways.
Yep.
So speaking of, you know, the tools, and you mentioned, you know, having kind of a seamless of experience with vendor partnerships on AWS, where, you know, a CMO, a CTO, a CIO, whoever might be can leverage obviously the pipes, but they can also associate themselves with vendors that are providing particular services on top of that. And you mentioned that you don't really have to build this anymore. But what would your take be on the most important people within an organization, especially when you're dealing with data-driven analytics, marketing, behind the scenes that you have to as sort of necessary components to making this process successful? I mean, who from a team perspective do you think an organization should think about having on staff to be able to select the right types of vendors to work with and then actually make all this stuff work, considering they might be using more than one tool?
I think what's interesting is marketing has gone away from just purely being a branding or awareness or even just like demand gen. The marketer is, because of, you know, in the stat that I pointed to in the Brave New Worlds one was, you know, marketers are going to spend $122 billion on technology and services by the end of next year. So marketers certainly have a seat at the table when it comes to technology decisions. And I start seeing this like blended role of like the digital technologists, a marketing or business focused role that is technology savvy. So the idea of marketing waiting for IT is even less realistic because, you know, marketing is influencing technology decisions. So there's people in product that are focused on marketing. There's people on the data side that are extracting insights and analytics that are certainly facilitating those technology decisions for the marketing team. So I think that there's this trend of these blended marketing technology roles that are kind of running across the entire organization from both marketing and IT.
I think you're right about that. I think there's there's this need for, you know, a team of individuals who can support the marketing's digital function and ensure that they have what they need, you know, for insights, for analytics, as well as for execution and for campaign management. You kind of need, there's more than just, you know, I know this audience and I want to target this audience. There are other things that you can glean, other use cases that you can take out of that data as well. And I think you've described a couple of those. So what's the road ahead look like, Brian? You know, we've been talking a lot about, you know, some of these trends, you know, the changes from the pandemic, and there's so much that you've brought up already in this episode. But, you know, what would your top three predictions be, you know, for the road ahead?
I think we talked about the less so exciting stuff with data, privacy first and privacy safe solutions. You're going to continue to see that as probably the biggest talking point in the industry as the deprecation of third-party cookies goes away and every brand needs to focus on a first-party data strategy. The second trend that we've talked about is the impact on Web3 and what are the different use cases and marketing strategies and tactics that brands are going to use, both in terms of data and data hygiene, data insights, data extraction, but also just the new concepts that brands can start interacting and engaging with their users in a more meaningful way, in a very personalized way. So excited about those. And then the last piece that I personally am extremely excited about and have a lot of faith in is the continued evolution of the channel. As brands are less focused on acquisitions of just, say, solutions in a box, but they're more focused on the integration of their entire ecosystem of technology and professional services solutions. You know, to break down data silos, you're going to continue to see the importance of connectivity. For example, like how many data integrations or partners does your solution connect to? Since that's ultimately going to impact both the downstream and upstream impact of the data and the data quality that you're using to power your business. The channel is going to be a critical focus for marketers to optimize that end-to-end user journey at every single turn. And so I'm extremely bullish on the channel and the ecosystem as it pertains to marketers and the insights that brands are working with.
Yeah, and I think that last point you made is it's sort of necessity is the mother of invention, mm-hmm. right? As data becomes either deprecated or more siloed behind the growing number of walled gardens, whether they're retail media networks, whether they're social media networks, whether they're television publisher giants like the Hulus of the world, mm-hmm. right? You've got to have a way to partner with all of these key media partners and channel partners, to your point, to gather insights about what the hell your customers are doing, mm-hmm. right? And your prospects are doing. How are they going from one to the other, being exposed to advertising content or otherwise? To your point about that, the tracking the customer journey, if you haven't built that ecosystem and done it in sort of a clean room, privacy protected sort of way, where you do have visibility, because you can't trust everybody grading their own homework, it goes back to this concept of necessity is the mother of invention. It's almost like we're solving for, and I think a big theme of this episode, right, is we've seen this massive digital transformation.
I think one point that you made is like, you know, you can't grade your own homework, but you can lean on a partner that has already finished his homework and got graded, or his or her homework and gotten graded. And so that's where like partners can share those insights, share what a successful path looks like with, you know, a specific industry or a specific customer. And that it, to me is super important as it pertains to that channel or ecosystem strategy that marketers are going to employ in the years to come.
Yeah, that partner's like a referee, right? It's the third party credibility.
Yep.
So you're not trusting the person that maybe owns the media, but you're trusting a third party that is, you know, validated, verified.
Absolutely.
Very cool. Well, good talking to you, Brian.
I appreciate the time.